Welcome, everyone, to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, July 26, 2022, the post-Comic-Con edition, alongside Ian Ferguson.
Yeah.
I'm Pat Contry.
That is.
On the show today, we'll be talking about all the hot news from Comic-Con, all the pop culture news you can handle, MCU announcements. We'll be talking about Vince McMahon retiring. Oh, we're talking about some breaking news on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Cowabunga collection. Exclusive news that we got.
I don't think it's exclusive.
Well, they weren't giving out news to everyone even there.
No, I asked him. He said, no, it's all public now.
Okay, then. Too late. It was breaking a few days ago. No,
but it's still breaking for a lot of you.
It was breaking when I saw it on Friday or Saturday. So anyway, Ian, we talked about a little bit about Comic-Con. But how was your weekend? We didn't talk about Comic-Con. Comic-Con returned to summer. It was in the fall, the little mini edition, which was still huge, but this was the main Comic-Con back.
Yeah.
Three years.
Right. So we talked about it a little bit in the bonus bits.
Bonus Patreon.
The bonus bits on podcast. Patreon. In addition to the Comic-Con stuff, I got to see some old friends that I hadn't seen in a while. Ate a lot of pizza, drank some tiki drinks. Sure. I've started working on music again.
You were spinning?
No. Well, I mean, I've been doing the DJ stuff again recently, but a friend of mine sent me a very nice surprise over the week, and I got a new synthesizer that I was not expecting. Just showed up on my doorstep. And so...
A new synth?
Yeah. And I've been messing with that, and it's been fun to get kind of creative again. But in addition, like Comic-Con wise, one of the things that I love to do is get some free pinball in, because Stern is always there. And they usually always do their booth, and they usually have a few new machines there, their newest machines. This year, they had Godzilla and Mandalorian on the floor, which is great. I mean, it makes sense. Those are perfect themes for the show floor. And then in their... at the Marriott, they do a free pinball lounge where they usually set up both the pro and the premium models of a handful of machines.
First time I saw that there. That was nice.
Oh, yeah. No, they've done it. I think they did it 2019, 2018, maybe 2017.
Yeah, it was nice. Nice open area. They had it was 25, 30
about 25 machines.
Yeah.
And they had Comic-Con wide leaderboards that would update from the machines.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I
give away a prize for high scores.
I don't know, but at Saturday night, I was on the top 10 for Rush, and I was on the top 10 for Deadpool. But I think I eventually got knocked off. Someone actually texted me, a popular pinball streamer that I like, Deadflip. Messaged me on Twitter that he was streaming and trying to take my scores down. So I don't know if that actually happened or not, but I would imagine he's a much better player than I am. So yeah, that's always fun. And it's a good way to get out of the crowd.
Yeah.
To go do a Marriott thing.
Did Nintendo have a lounge this year?
They did not.
So, cause they're usually in the Marriott right next door. If you get everyone in the Comic-Con, the three things, you get the Marriott, then the convention center, then the Hilton Bayfront on the left side of it. And usually those three, that's your main three areas.
I don't think I've ever done anything at the Hilton.
There's a panel there. I went to see one of the earlier Rift Tracks panels there in like 2011. It was like pretty big. It's like not Hall H size, but that's where like the second biggest panels usually are there. It's walking distance.
Yeah, I usually end up in the Marriott for a drink or like for the pinball or the Nintendo stuff.
I have a pinball contribution to the podcast.
Yeah?
Queen Pinball announced.
Yeah.
Show some fucking respect to Queen.
I like Queen. It's not Queen. That's the problem.
This is the article from pinballnews.com. It was from July 21st. So they revealed a prototype in London last year. I didn't know that. So this was shown last year. Swedish pinball company Pinball Brothers have today officially announced the launch of their Queen pinball machine. Two versions, of course. Champions Edition, $92.95. While the Rhapsody Limited Edition, will be 11 grand. Like their Alien game. You ever play the Alien one?
I have.
Is it good? Queen Games will be built by Pedretti Gaming in Milan, Italy. There you go.
My opinion on the Alien game is to be decided. I need to play more, but I did not like it when I first played it.
The Rhapsody limited edition will be 1,000 units and will feature illuminated artwork on the cabinet interior and on the back panel, a shaker motor, a special shooter rod. Swap out the rod for something else.
There's usually like an ornament on the end of it.
Great. Gold colored metalwork. Okay. Gold colored cabinet and back box art package, number plaque and certificate. So of course everyone's going to want that. Once you're spending $9,300, you might as well spend 11 grand. That's how they get you.
Yep.
Right. 14 tracks.
All live, I believe.
Yes. These are like greatest hits stuff. There's no
deep cuts.
No deep cuts. The deepest cut will be Seven Seas of Rye. That's one of the earliest ones that ever shows up on a greatest hits, because their first two albums was their weird experimental like themed albums where it's like ogre battles and weird shit. Yeah. And it's like that didn't really stick. So Seven Seas of Rye is like the earliest one you see that there. But yeah, so we Are the Champions. You got Bohemian, obviously. Another One Bites the Dust, Kind of Magic, which is from the Highlander soundtrack, which is great. You know, that version you can't fucking buy. It's different on the album, and a bunch of other ones. So yeah, I'd want to play this. I'm not saying I want to buy it, but Queen's my all time favorite album. So yeah, I'm kind of interested in checking it out.
I'd like to play it. I don't hate Queen. I like Queen. This was announced literally the day after I made a Twitter post saying I would really like to stop seeing geezer rock bands.
Queen's not geezer rock, though. Queen is Queen. You cannot go a week without watching TV where Queen songs not used on a commercial. Sure. I'm being deadly serious. They are in the pop culture, their hits.
Well, all of these bands are in the pop culture. I'm just saying specifically like 70 eras rock and roll that is meant to move machines to 50-year-olds.
Sure.
And it's not because I don't like some of these bands that get the treatment. I love Rush. Mm-hmm. I love Iron Maiden. I like Queen. I just, as a theme, I'm tired of it.
Okay.
I don't think the playfield looks great, but I've played a lot of playfields that I didn't think looked great and really enjoyed them. So I don't like the look.
I think Queen's a cut above those bands, but okay.
Queen is not That's a cut fine. Above Rush.
I put them on the Rolling Stones sort of scale, where it's like they're going to be listened to 100 years from now, still on commercials. It's like, okay, agree to disagree. You know. That's fine.
Anyway. That's fine. That's anyway,
fine.
Moving on.
That's fine. That's fine. So yeah, Comic-Con was fun. I spent $440 on acrylic. It was the most I ever spent at a single Comic-Con. But when I looked back, I was like, I bought gifts for
really
people.
The most.
I spent like $600.
Okay, $600. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think I ever spent was like $500.
Even when I try to remember, when I bought that dumb Transformers G.I. Joe crossover big ass one that I ended up selling to someone.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was like $200, $240. But like, I was like, I didn't probably spend a huge amount above the outside of that. I don't usually buy expensive comics. I'll buy like one or two like comics maybe. I bought the first appearance of I bought Luke Cage Powerman #1 like several years ago. I don't know if it was worth anything. Who the hell knows?
Right.
Bronze Age comics are common. Once you get to the 70s, comics are fucking common. They're all common. But that's really it. And I used to buy stuff with Frank, like trade paperbacks and, you know, the random, I'd pick out Daredevils for Frank that were beat up, trying to go, you know, get Philip Frank's back catalog there. But yeah, AFA was there. AFA is the action.
What's AFA?
The Action Figure Authority. They're also the people who do VGA, the Video Game Authority.
Right.
The OG video game graders. And they were selling both mint on card figure and loose cartridge and box game acrylic cases. So if you buy them there, you're saving on shipping, and these things are heavy. You're saving on tax if you pay with cash. and then it's a deal. On top of it. So, like, for example, the NES cases, for some reason, the same price, different acrylic. I bought five cartridge cases and 15 complete in-box cases, and they were only $15 each. You're going online, you're going to be paying double that.
They're nice cases, too.
No, they're great.
They're great.
The slide out at the bottom. It's funny because I told them, not humble bragging, but like when I got my NWC cases made, you couldn't get NES. There was no cart cases. For any system.
Yeah.
We're talking 12 years ago. I had to measure it and send it in and get that. And I told them it was funny. Both times it was sent back, it was a proper length and height, but not the width. It was like a double NES. They had to send me. They did it twice. They sent it back both times. But I said to the guy that was there, I said, you might have used my measurement to start making the NES ones. He laughed, so we might have done that because they didn't do that at the time. So I bought those.
So it was the same guy, the same people that did the...
The same ones I got. Yeah. The case from 12 years ago. So I got 15 of them. 15 for $15 right there. I got 20 of them for 15. That's $300. But then I came back on Sunday. I'm like, you know, I got some G.I. Joe mint on card. I might as well pick these up.
Right.
And these were the UV upgraded ones.
They won't fade.
I think the normal ones have some UV protection, but not a lot. And these have like 99%.
You need it with action figures. Otherwise, you're going to get all that yellowing.
So my G.I. Joes have been in a box in the garage once I got at the flea market. That was not a flea market madness. If it was, it would have been one of the best deals I ever got. $10 each, I bought about 30 carded G.I. Joe figures, most from the late 80s to 90s. But I did get mid-80s ones, including Tiger Force Sneak Peek and Tiger Force Psych Out, which were European exclusives, which I did not know at the time when I bought them because I didn't have a smartphone in 2000, 10, 11 when I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone got the Tunnel Rat one before me, which is the most valuable one, which I'm pissed I didn't get the Tiger Force Tunnel Rat, but whatever. So I went back, and I bought the remaining ones that they had. She said, oh, there's 7 left, 25 for one or 40 for two. I said, well, give me the rest of the 7. There was an 8th one in there. I was honest, you give me one more. She said, oh, okay, you're fine. So for $140, I got 8 cases. If I had bought them online, because I'm an idiot and I'm OCD about this, I went home to see how much I saved. It would have cost double. Between the discount, shipping, and taxes, had I bought it online. So I basically got it for half off. So I'm like, okay. So then I come home, Ian. I'm like, all right, let's get the G.I. Joes out of the box in the garage where they've been.
I feel bad.
Forever. I really bought these for the two Tiger Force exclusive European ones because they're worth several hundred dollars each. You can't find them. They didn't come out here. And so then I'm like, Airtight, the nerdy, geeky Biohazard guy that I loved. It wasn't a lot of episodes, but we all loved Airtight. He fit fine in the case.
We all love Airtight.
Airtight's great. It's fucking great. He's a geek. He's like a science geek. He's nerdy. Anyway, so and then I get out the Tiger Force Psych Out, and I slip it in the case. And they have that tab on the top to keep it flush. I had to get like a ruler and press it down because if the car's not straight, it won't fit under the tab. No one told me about that, AFA. I'm trying to close it. I'm like, wait a minute. The card can't close. Why is this in all the way? So the European G.I. Joe figures, the card's a half inch longer for some reason. For no reason at all. So I got to now buy two more ones that fit those. I don't know if it's...
Do they make a European size?
Yes, they do. They make everything. It's called like the long European.
Long card or long European. For sure.
Yeah. So... It's expensive though. If you buy that, if you're a collector, and if you're buying acrylic cases for every figure, you're spending thousands of dollars.
Oh yeah,
if these are like $25 each, then you buy like this. Like for example, I have the G.I. Joe movie Slaughter's. What is it? The Renegades, the three guys. I have the. It's like a big wide one. So that case alone is probably $40-$50 just because it's a irregular shape. So it's an expensive hobby. That's why I can't get into it.
No, it's too much.
So I bought that.
I
bought about 5 gifts for other people there. I was like texting people. Okay, what do you want? What do you into geeky stuff? And get a list of stuff. Okay, you like Black Widow. There's these cute little keychains. I might have picked out a couple for friends. Everyone likes plush pillow cats. Might have picked up one.
We picked up some stuff for my sister-in-law because she's never been. We did a couple of gifts.
It's good to gift because you don't think about this stuff until you see it. You're like, oh, that's kind of cute.
I bought Vonnie some gifts.
Yeah. I'm sure to get them.
I already gave them to her.
Yeah. Okay. In terms of the attendance, it was not peak. It was probably 30% less people if I had a guess in my Pat math.
It was a lot more comfortable.
I knew that on Friday. When I walked on Friday.
I felt like Saturday was the big... I thought it was glaringly obvious on Saturday.
Bing! Well, there was everyone was in the everyone was shopping on Sunday, so you had it was mostly crowded on Sunday.
Yeah.
At least on the right side where you were.
Yeah, it was crazy. We were busier Sunday, I think, than we were Saturday.
But on Friday, Friday's a busy day.
Yeah.
Saturday's busy. You could hear yourself. It was like audibly less noise. It was like, oh, this isn't like loud at all.
I've become an earplug person, an all the time earplug person. I didn't need them.
I never use my Comic Con, but like usually at Comic Con, when you get towards the middle where like Sideshow is, and usually where Marvel is, you have to like really struggle to get through.
Yeah.
You didn't have to on Friday. I'm not saying it was clear paths, but like you walked through. You weren't waiting to get through.
Did you go Thursday?
No, I didn't go Thursday.
Okay, I heard Thursday was very, very busy. I think that was the best money day, at least for our friend.
People are getting the early deals.
It's probably different for different vendors. For someone like him who's selling $10, like has a whole section devoted to $10 t-shirts, mm-hmm. people are like, we got to go there first before all the good shit is gone.
Oh, they had a reputation, maybe?
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. They've got a reputation for that. Okay, it was so funny because a lot of people were wearing shirts and they were like, we bought this from here last year.
There you go. We could throw some podcast shirts in there that we have right. We just have smalls left of the chibi shirt. We could have threw them in there.
Yeah.
Next year, Ian, we could do that. I went immediately. It's funny. It worked out this way. I went immediately right. I usually start from the right, work my way. I do one day. I think I did it on Saturday.
I do everything.
And you could do it in a couple hours if you keep a decent pace.
Yeah.
You can do it.
You cannot do it in a couple hours with someone. If you're alone, yes.
If you're alone, you're like stopping here and there. You can do it in a couple hours, maybe two and a half. So I did that on Saturday by myself for most of it. During the weekend, I hung out with Destiny FOMO, Pixel Dan, and Andre a lot on the weekend. I didn't walk around with Ian this year because Ian was working. No Frank. Frank has been there now 4 years about. And no Frank Cifaldi. No, none of the Franks were there.
Yeah, it was sad.
Unfortunately. But I walked right immediately, and it was like just like a weird thing. Limited Run was there, and then my buddy Roger from iMockery, who's doing the Sin and Cyanide game. Happiness of Cyanide game, excuse me.
I saw him briefly, but I didn't say hi. It was just crowded, and I was busy, and I saw him walk by, and he said hi to Vani, but yeah.
They were both next to each other, like just by themselves on the right. So it was just so weird that they were both there. It was like
sure
perfect combination there. And so I got to say hi to him like immediately. And it was funny. I said to the Limited Run folks, hey, you're selling my book. And she was like, oh, yeah, that thing's heavy. I'm like, yep. No, it's heavy. It's actually heavy. They weren't selling my book at the event, but they have them on the website and at the store for that. So, no, it was fun. I had fun. I hope everyone stayed as safe as they could. They were requiring masks, even though they weren't enforcing it. I'd say 95% or more of people were wearing masks. There, so that's good. And you had to be vaccinated or show proof of negative tests before you got in. So, you know, that's what you're going to do there. Do you want to talk about the MCU stuff a little bit?
I think you're better to start it off. But yes, we can talk about that, of course.
Okay, so I'm less and less excited about superhero stuff every year. We've been inundated with this. It's been 14 years. It peaked with Infinity War and Endgame. I don't think we're ever going to reach those heights again.
Nope.
We just aren't.
We just can't.
Because it was a perfect amount. It was only 2 to 3 movies a year. There were no TV shows for the most part. It was just like, I mean, there were, but no one cared about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. No one cared.
Like I said, I've said before, it was a fun experiment, but I just don't think I don't think people in general are going to want to do that sort of intense lore following.
Yes, because now there's more and more of it too.
Right,
it's too much now.
Right, no one wants to go through another 10-year story.
But now it's like, well, I got to watch 4 movies a year, 3 shows. We're talking like it goes from watching like okay, 10 hours of your time a year. You got to give up 70 hours of your time in a like or 50 hours. Like that's just not reasonable.
No,
I want to watch other stuff. Not. I've started getting into Better Call Saul, which is like amazing, and so I'd like to diversify my content viewing. Something not everything has to have a superhero and a cape in it. I'd like to watch other dramas. You know.
Absolutely.
So that's fine. And I've realized as I got older, maybe my tastes have changed where it's like, okay, I have a certain amount of fantastical stuff I can take before I want real reality, more interesting things to me.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, so the big news is that we're going to have 2 Avengers movies in 6 months in a few years and a Fantastic Four movie. like within a year of each other, like those three movies.
That's a crush. That's like, that's just insane.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have a season two of Loki. I'll just run through everything that you're going to get. There's a ton of stuff. Because you already had, in this phase four, Black Widow, No Way Home, Thor, Love and Thunder, Eternals, Everyone Forgot that came out. And everyone forgot, you said you forgot about Shang-Chi that came out, which I like Shang-Chi. I think it's pretty good.
I mean, I'll watch it at some point, but it did. It just slipped past me.
But Black Widow and Eternals were the first ones where I was like, you know what? I can skip these. And now it's been more and more easy to skip stuff in general. I skipped Moon Knight. I thought I'd be on Moon Knight because I like the actor and I think the character is pretty cool. You know, I haven't watched it yet. I haven't had the time to invest in it.
I think that's the only thing I saw Doctor Strange and I watched Moon Knight, and I think that's all of Phase 4 I've paid attention to.
Did you see Spider-Man yet?
I haven't seen any of those Spider-Man movies. None of them.
Okay. Well, this last one was good. She-Hulk's coming out. I'll watch She-Hulk. I always liked She-Hulk. It's going to be a goofier comedic thing, and they're going to have Daredevil show up. Lawyer makes sense.
I am excited for the Daredevil announcement.
An 18-episode Daredevil season.
We need it.
Good old Kevin Feige. That's his favorite thing, obviously. He wanted it back, and so we're going to do it. You're going to get your Vincent D'Onofrio back, probably.
Yep.
I will go on record again. Daredevil is the best MCU thing that's ever existed, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Of all the movies and TV shows, it's the best thing.
I still am really, really, really partial to Winter Soldier as a movie, but I think, but as far as a developed, yes, there was so much care put into that show for a character that almost no one hardcore cares about.
It's a B character. It's not an A-lister.
Right.
But, you know, but I mean, it's a beloved character, but it was never going to be like someone that could carry a movie franchise. Oh, I mean, they tried with Affleck, but that movie was awful.
Right.
There. Okay. You're going to get Secret Invasion series. That'll be interesting. The Echo series, I don't know about that. I guess we'll see. It was a side character in Hawkeye, and I think Daredevil's going to show up in that as well. I'm kind of weird out about the side characters getting their own series, like the one from WandaVision. Their own series. I'm like, I don't know about the interest.
It's
with
a,
some of these
it's
characters.
A content mill. It's just a churn.
Yeah,
it's just a churn.
It's like, okay. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is obviously coming out next year. It's going to be the last one. The Marvels is going to be coming out. Is that later this year or next year? And then Secret Invasion is going to be a dark and gritty political conspiracy thriller starring S.H.I.E.L.D. legends Colby Smulders and Rhea Hill.
Could be fun.
I'm more into that. Let's something different. Let's get something different. I'm kind of into that. I liked Hawkeye because it was something different. So
I do need to watch Hawkeye.
And then season two of Loki, I really don't have interest in that. I didn't mind the first season, but I don't know if I need to revisit that again. I just don't know. Blade's still coming out. I keep forgetting they announced Blade. They announced a new Blade like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, didn't they?
It's been a while. You're going to get an Ironheart series who's being introduced in Wakanda Forever.
Yeah.
She shows up briefly. Yes, Agatha, Coven of Chaos. Okay, that'll be the series. And then Captain America, New World Order, new movie.
Is Agatha the side character from WandaVision?
She was a villain.
Okay, yeah, I never
great actress,
it.
She's funny. I don't know if I want to see that.
Sure.
I do want to see She-Hulk. That's the one I think I'm invested in. There's a new trailer. They cleaned up the CG. People were happy because the first trailer was like a little iffy on the CG. So, well, that's what happens. You need more time to work on this stuff. And then, yes, Daredevil's going to be in that. At least. So there's a lot of stuff. And then phase 5 is going to end with Thunderbolts, which is the villains.
It's phase like, 5 it, or phase 4?
Phase 5 is going to end. So like we're basically starting.
No, we're on phase 4 right now. We're halfway through phase 4.
Okay. So, but phase 5 is going to be in 2 years. So yeah. Like, I guess we're starting phase 5 is like lickety split almost soon.
I don't know. The one article I said halfway through phase 4, but they're already clearly talking about a lot of phase 5.
Yeah. And then we're going to get to Fantastic Four. For phase 6, and that's going to where it's going to be nuts. You're going to get Avengers, Kang Dynasty, and Secret Wars, May and November of 2025. So they're really, it's almost like, well, you had almost a year and a half of not doing anything because of the pandemic. It was tough, and now we're going to ratchet up and catch up, basically. I guess. I thought Fantastic Four would have been out by now. You have to wait a couple more years. I thought they would announce like cast by now. Maybe in the fall, because they do their D23 thing.
So, I forgot they're Disney. They're part of that now.
well, it's their own convention.
Yeah, I know.
So
what I mean.
So they're gonna probably announce stuff like that in the Deadpool movie. Like that's probably gonna be like more announced there, like Deadpool 3, like for sure, like stuff like that. That's what they're saying.
Sure.
So anyway, it's a lot of content. But the one we're talking about, Wakanda Forever, is coming out in the fall. Amazing trailer, but
really good trailer.
Trailers can deceive.
Yes, they can.
I've seen good trailers before in crappy movies. I am very cautiously optimistic. Like,
yes,
this can go really wrong.
Yeah, it absolutely can.
because they're obviously acknowledging the death of Chadwick Boseman, so they're killing off T'Challa, which I have said I disagree with that. I think they should have recast it, but they want to pay. The movie's going to be an homage to the character and the actor. I understand it, but you're going to tread really dangerous ground, I think, and how people receive this. Because already there's like a more growing backlash about people wanting the character to be recast. They said Chad would have wanted that, continue the character. Well, they're not going that direction. So I'm more excited about Sub-Mariner. Namor getting finally a movie. He's one of the original heroes from Marvel, him in the original Human Torch, very underutilized in like the history of the comics. It's good to see it finally. They couldn't do it before because it was tied, I think, to the Fantastic Four rights for some weird reason. Through Fox.
No, I think it was tied to the Spider-Man.
No, it was tied to Universal.
Oh, okay. I thought it was tied to the Spider-Man Sony stuff.
No, it wasn't that. It's not a Spider-Man character. I believe, yes, it was
Universal. No, I know he's not, but I knew he was attached to something strange.
It was a Universal thing, like Hulk. Okay. That's right.
Got it.
That's right. It wasn't his four. So they're changing it. I don't mind the change. Now it's going to be like a Mayan sort of underwater like thing. It's very Mayan-esque. Versus being totally Atlantean looking. There's some, it mixes in though.
Sure.
Some more look like the blue Atlanteans. And talking to people in the biz that I know, it's like, well, they wanted to tie it more to the real world, and they also didn't want people to say, oh, this is just like Aquaman.
Right. That's fair.
Submariner came before Aquaman.
Yes. But Aquaman got popular through movies before
Submariner. Yes, I know. But it's a shame.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's one of those characters that I would have loved to see it totally the way from the comics, but I'll reserve judgment until I see it. I think they can still do it justice, but like I would have loved to see, because he has such an iconic look, and whenever he's been drawn, it's always the same in the comics. It's never really changed over now 80 years. So we'll see. I don't know who's gonna be the Black Panther in this. If it's going to be Shuri or someone else, there's a shot of the butt of the Black Panther at the end with the claws coming out.
Please,
so obviously,
not Shuri.
What's that?
Please not Shuri.
No.
I mean, based on the actor that plays her.
So we'll see. I think I'm looking forward to it though. I'll see it in the theaters.
Yeah,
I'll see it in the theaters.
Speaking of comics, every time I try to give this guy a chance, hi, this is from the Onion AV Club. How fake accounts in a powder keg fandom helped Zack Snyder restore his Justice League by Matt Shimkowitz. This is an interesting article. Check it out. Detailing basically how unorganic, and I think we've talked about
this.
Yeah. No, how unorganic the Snyder cut machine was, inorganic.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, getting the studios to let him do his 4-hour fucking overblown vision. And it sounds like he...
Which wasn't a director's cut, by the way.
Right.
It wasn't. They shot a hell of a lot of new stuff, and it was a totally different thing.
Right. And he welled, the power of this fan base over, executives and people to get his shit done. So
release the Snyder Cut hashtag campaign.
A good chunk of the Snyder Cut champions were bots or fake accounts.
Of course.
Some of which, according to Rolling Stone, Snyder helped whip into a frenzy between the first release of Justice League until well after Snyder's version bowed on HBO Max. Two reports commissioned by Warner Media showed that at least 13% of the accounts that took part in the conversation about the Snyder Cut were deemed fake. The norm on Twitter is roughly 3-5%. So as the outlet reports, real stands were amplified by a disproportionate number of bogus accounts. And it goes on to talk about how I believe it was Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook each had a person in charge of managing the bots and directing them to, you know, whip up essentially the fan frenzy. So 13% doesn't sound like a ton, but it's clearly over what Twitter usually deals with. And those 13%, it's not just a number. Those 13% were used to basically more bang for your buck in that 13% in terms of whipping up the frenzy.
Because there was more engagement.
They were more engaged. More correct. Up. Right.
The report, this is from the AV Club reporting that Rolling Stone did this stuff. Good old Rolling Stone. The report is even more damning for Snyder, whom Rolling Stone all but accuses of actively manipulating the media and weaponizing his fan base against studio execs and journalists. As one source told the outlet, Zack was like a Lex Luthor wreaking havoc.
Yeah.
After 2019, when popularity surrounding the Snyder Cut movement led to your standard series of death threats and memes depicting the decapitated heads of Warner Brothers executives being sent to the families of said execs, Snyder continued to leverage his fan base. He knew what was going on.
Yeah.
He knew.
He knew.
In one instance, he allegedly warned a reporter who published a story about a Flash casting announcement he took issue with that his fans
were pretty rough.
A bully.
Yeah. A bully.
I remember Snyder. His big thing was he had an Instagram post where it was like showing the canisters of like his cut. This was like 4 or 5 years, whenever it was. Saying that it exists. I remember that was being a thing where it was like, oh, he says he has it ready to go here.
Right.
Where it was just like, no. He had to get tens of millions of dollars. I think it was like $70 million that they spent in order to film more stuff, cut
more
it together.
Stuff.
And then, you know, do more new CG for like the big battles with Darkseid and everything and do all this shit. Darkseid, just spell like Darkseid.
Yeah.
Darkseid. So like, it's kind of weird, but I wonder how now like the industry's not looking at him because they realized that what happened. Will he ever be a big director again? Will he get a lot of projects? I know he did that zombie movie, but like, I really wonder if this is like what kind of like.
If this is going to be a bad moment for him.
Where it's like, well, you got what you wanted, but at what cost?
At what cost?
At what cost?
Your reputation.
You know, like, is he going to do, now I'm going to look up like, what is he doing now? He's doing Army of the Dead Las Vegas. That's what he has. He's going to be a director for a TV thing. Films. Zack Snyder's Justice League 2021. Army of the Dead. So I guess he's doing the whole Army thing. I don't know what it's about. Oh, Army of the Dead is a heist film. Army of the Dead was a zombie one. So there you go.
You know what has a sterling reputation?
What does, Ian?
Your website. I botched that. UltimateNintendo.com.
Did you forget the name of the
store? It took me a second. Yeah, I'm having a morning.
And what can you get at UltimateNintendo.com, Ian?
You can get books, pins, RBI baseball stickers, other stuff.
You can get
shirts,
T-shirts,
and
weird
there.
Sizes that are left that aren't in the bin at where Ian was selling at Comic-Con. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/contrycode, and I recorded an emergency cameo at Comic-Con. It was one of those like 24 hours. Cameo.com/PatContry. If you want it within 24 hours, it's a premium.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh my God, I have 2 hours left to do it. And I recorded at Comic-Con and the person liked it for their birthday.
Oh, good.
The guy said his wife was tearing up about it. Aww. I was like, oh, there you go. That makes it all worth it. The cameo, that's why I was so surprised. The cameos don't come in off anymore. When I got, I'm like, oh damn, it's a 24 hour one. I got to get it done. And people next to me, I was like sitting down like at one of those pillars, like by the stairs, and the person next to me is like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, hey, what's going on? Recording myself. Talk about this rug pull article.
So this isn't, I mean, this touches on NFTs, which we cover. But there's an article basically on, we've talked a lot about Republic in terms of the Intellivision Amico. But Republic is also used for a number of other things, and apparently it's been fairly popular in terms of being used to raising money to back cryptocurrency, to back like a new cryptocurrency.
What can go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? So this article is about Parastate, Parastate was the they did an initial coin offering on Republic, raised a massive $8.2 million. Now, with that much money on the line, if things go poorly, people will be upset. However, this has been a pretty brutal one for anyone that invested. After raising the $8 million, they listed their token on Uniswap so people can trade. It immediately plummeted. After one day, anyone that invested likely lost as much as 90%. This is from Caleb Naismith. It's Democratizing Finances, the website. I mean, that's just insane. But at this point, I have to wonder, what do people think? So why are they doing this? So it talks a little bit about how, like, basically, if they raise $8.2 million, it wouldn't necessarily be unheard of. And I don't know if this is how they did it. They listed their token. Sometimes people will put it up for two times what they do the pre-sales for.
I see.
So if you buy $500 worth of this coin, when it's listed, you've got $1,000. Why wouldn't people use this as a get rich quick scheme? You know, you put your $500 in, you get your $1,000 worth of value, and you immediately cash out. And that's what happens. No one holds when that starts to happen.
Yeah, when the whales sell.
They sell, people get nervous, and they start to, then the people underneath them sell because they want to recoup at least some of their money, and then you leave people with nothing. And it's just,
you get some bounces back out where people think, oh, I'm going to buy them cheap, and then, but then it just crashes. There's the dead cat bounce at the end.
But people say that Republic has been kind of shady about it when people were complaining. Oh, not kind of, really shady. When people started to complain, they turned off comments where on whatever it was that they could leave comments on.
We've seen on the Amico, the comments.
Right. And they mentioned, so the article does early on talk a bit about how Republic has a lot of blemishes right now, and it does bring up the Intellivision. One of the biggest debacles prior to Parastate was Intellivision. Intellivision raised $11.5 million from Republic investors and several more millions in pre-orders. That's not true.
That's not true.
Only for the company to constantly delay production, lose millions in a botched manufacturing deal, $1.5 million.
We don't talk about that enough, by the way.
Yeah, and is currently sitting on the brink of bankruptcy. So interesting to see that Intellivision's failure is big enough that people are mentioning it in articles about, you know, failed cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as an aside, I mean, Amico's going to go down as one of the weirdest failed ventures we've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm tired of talking about, but 5 years' time, we haven't even begun to hear about the shit that was going on there.
No,
it's going to be solidified as a big problem.
We'll get a book.
Or a big deal.
We'll get a book.
Yeah.
First of all, we're going to get interviews from people that were there.
Yes.
We're going to get a documentary probably eventually how disastrous it was. Because if we think it saw a disaster on the outside, imagine what was like working there.
Right.
Imagine working alongside Tommy Tallarico every day.
The disaster that we've painted is just from little snips and bits that have come out.
That's from us extrapolating using common sense. Imagine how bad the stories are behind the scenes. The stories from the devs, things they were told. The stories from people potentially doing business deals with Tommy. Like how bad those stories are.
Right.
It's going to be, we painted it into well of a light, probably. I mean, we all kind of did all the whole time. But anyway, I just think it's weird how they could say on Republic, they can look at this as an investment. Like, what does the SEC filing show for a fucking cryptocurrency?
Right.
Here's the risks. It's crypto.
Yeah.
It does nothing. That's the risk. It does nothing, and you'll probably lose your money. Like, is that in the risk section?
Let's talk about what's not risky. It'll be a lot easier. Nothing.
the risks. Well, most crypto goes to shit.
Right.
So you're going to probably lose your money. Can you imagine that? Like, I'm not saying they're good for doing that, but you know you're doing this coin. You know you're going to walk away with millions of dollars of people behind this. It's like, well, we're doing this. It's legal.
Right.
It's legal. These are just fucking marks. They're marks. You're marks on the blockchain. Blockchain marks.
It's
NFT crypto.
Yeah.
It's same thing. It's bad. I feel bad for some of these people. Like, there's more and more like Coinbase and other marketplaces where you can't get at your money. It's gone. They're filing for bankruptcy. Your money is literally gone.
Yeah.
You cannot access it. And people are like saying, well, I have a kid now. I can't make rent. I put everything into this. I feel bad for these people. But everyone was warning you for years that this is bad.
Well, I mean,
really bad.
At some point, I mean to sound mean, but I don't feel bad.
I honestly feel bad for these people because they were taken for a ride. But like everyone, the vast majority of people are saying, this is a scam. You're getting scammed. This is all going to come to a bad end. And now we're seeing it. Now we're seeing it, Ian.
Yes.
Real quick, thanks for coming into the premiere of the part one of the trilogy of Tommy voicemail calls compiled. We're going to probably do them every Sunday or so, Saturday or Sunday.
People seem to be real happy.
Yep.
I'm glad Joey's getting the recognition he deserves.
Good old Joey Freeze, the talent behind that. Everyone knew it was a no. No one did. Everyone out there thought it was like other people.
Yep.
And everyone was wrong. Everyone was wrong. Everyone was wrong. A lot of people are now like, well, these are fun. We want the reactions of us cut up. The more we actually listen, I'm like, great, give me more work. I guess I could
do that. It makes sense. I mean, but yeah, that is more work for you.
All right. Give me more work. I got enough going on as is. Yeah, that's good. And I want to mention that I was really happy to hang out with people. I don't have really close friends locally in San Diego. A lot of people across the U.S., other people. So it's good to see Andre. See good old Pixel Dan and his lovely wife, Christina. Hung out with Destiny FOMO, Roger from My Mockery, and then Chris Kohler. We'll talk about a little bit later because he was there representing the Cal Bunga Collection. And they all came to Castle Country on Saturday night. I ordered pizzas. Ian will be proud. It was the closest thing I ever had to a housewarming. And we sat outside with the fire pit with the couches that never been used before. And we ordered pizza, and we all hung out. It was fun.
I am happy that you got to, and I wish I could have been there, but I had prior plans made a couple weeks in advance, and both parties were catching up with people I hadn't seen in a long time.
I didn't plan it. It was sort of like Friday morning. I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
Why doesn't everyone just come here to hang out? Because it's not too far. It's quiet. It's like you get away from the craziness. We just order food and hang out. So it might become a new tradition. And it's funny because Andre had come over when he first arrived on Tuesday night after the podcast last week. He came into town. I was exhausted, but he came over. We ordered food and we watched Knight Rider together. I was explaining him the Knight Rider lore the same way I explained to you at one time. He was getting into it. He loved how like the transitions for the commercials was like you see the car going and the screen has a still and like it goes small and zooms out. Yeah, that whole effect. But no, it was great to see everyone, and I'm really super proud of Dan blowing up, and he was at Hall H at the 40th anniversary of Masters of the Universe panel. Literally, he was the first one who spoke. Kevin Smith, who moderated, went to Dan. It started with basically he had I think one or two people from the new show. He had Dolph Lundgren was there who played it in the movie that I've never seen still because that movie's actually not that good now.
Oh, it's fun. I mean, it's not good. I mean,
the finale is when they ran out of money. They're like fighting like in a room with smoke. I heard about that. Spoilers where it's just like they said we ran out of money. We couldn't shoot anything else. Anyway,
I liked it as a kid.
I was out by then. I was more into G.I. Joe. But anyway, so he was there. And then Dan was there. Dan was tearing up on stage in front of like several thousand people in Hall H. And Kevin Smith was like, lean into it, man. Lean into it. He's just talking about how nostalgic he was for how his mom used to buy his toys and stuff like. And I'll tell the story that Dan told me when he was backstage afterwards. Kevin was like, your mom, she's not dead, is she? And Dan's like, oh, no, she's not. She's okay. Because Kevin Smith thought how he was crying. That was like, you know, she was. And then Bill Shatner walked out on stage to the shock of everyone. No one knew, even the panelists didn't know. Bill Shatner, good old Will Shatner, 91 by the way, still ticking. He's gonna voice a new character in the next season of Revelations. And then he came up to Dan backstage afterwards and said, Dan, you did a great job, and spoke to Dan. Dan was like, holy shit, I'm talking to Will Shatner. Like, I'm talking to Captain Kirk. And so I'm really super proud of Dan. He's worked on one of the hardest workers I know that has done this for 14 years. He was putting out, going back and editing multiple videos a night, putting them out. It's the stuff I used to do at Comic-Con. I know how tough it is after you go and doing the book. And so
he grinded until he made it.
There you go. There you go. Love Dan and Christina. Vince, who I don't love, Vince McMahon, forced out. We saw this coming.
Hate him. Yeah, I don't have
disgusting.
A whole, I don't have a ton to say other than I am cautiously optimistic for the future of the company. Triple H, Paul Levesque.
Paul Levesque is back in.
He's back in.
Doing creative. Head of creative. That was Vince.
His NFT era and run was great. I mean,
it was his baby.
I loved watching. Oh, I said NFT, didn't I? I think NXT. Oh, his NXT run was great. I for 2 years, I mean, Vani and I, every week.
You used to tell me how much you loved it.
Would watch NXT. Great matches, just enough storyline, but
Down to earth stories.
Like,
say, like 80s, like NWA style, where there's some story, but it's more toned down.
Yeah, just great, great stuff. And it honestly gave me a level of respect for him that I didn't have prior, because it was clearly something he loved. And it was, like you said, it was his baby. He cherished it. And what was surprising was that he really did pump up and promote these wrestlers doing new shit. And it wasn't all just flippy acrobatic stuff. They were different styles and good matches.
Regal was the general manager. And
which was amazing. Regal. It was interesting because it's not exactly what I would have expected, you know, Triple H to promote. I figured he would have tried to go for more of that big man 80s and 90s style wrestling, because he himself, always carryable, did not have a particularly deep moveset.
He was a B2B plus wrestler at best, at his best matches.
Right.
Like a solid B.
Yeah.
People go down to the he's put on great matches. Has he ever put on a great match with someone who doesn't wrestle as well as him? I'll just say.
Right.
That.
No.
That's the point.
No.
Has he ever raised someone's
I don't think he's ever elevated anyone. I think he's been elevated many times.
Yes.
But that said, I thought he was fantastic in the creative role. I hope very, very quickly here they just burn NXT down and try again.
Well, they took him and Shawn Michaels' power away and then ruined it, supposedly.
I haven't watched it, but I heard it was just main stage stuff, but shittier. Just changed the style of NXT.
And we know they ruined all the NXT wrestlers they brought up.
Because Vince,
even the big ones,
Paul would bring them up, and I mean,
they bring up champions, and within 6-7 months they'd be forgotten.
He was gifting the main roster with just. I mean, we always talk about how there are no new superstars that in 20 years we're going to look at like The Undertaker or something like that, because they just keep falling back on what they have.
Yes, they're afraid.
That was, I think, Triple H's real attempt at trying to put some stock in the future of the company. Mm-hmm. And Vince shot it down every time.
So who was the one that went to then, I think, TNA or blew up, and he came to the main roster. He was a champion. This was like 2-3 years ago, right before the pandemic. He was used as a fucking jobber. He was like a champion in NXT. Who the fuck was that? He was a guy, the tan guy that was like the 6'3", 6'4", good looking, chiseled. You know what I'm talking about? But he came to the roster and they did, nothing with him. They wouldn't even let him like speak on the mic. It actually came like a joke where before he would speak, someone would cut him off.
It should have been. NXT should have truly been developmental. It should have been what was developing the next generation of stars. And there was just such a disconnect from NXT to WWE. There was not a smooth transition for any of them. I don't think any of the big ones from that era ever went on. Tyler Breeze was huge in NXT.
Well, at least he was using WWE for years, and as you know.
He was used, but I mean,
it wasn't as big, but he was used.
Whoever fucking... God, I don't even know the names anymore.
There's too many.
The Bray Wyatt's brother was in NXT, and he was fantastic.
Oh, that's right. He would run around the ring. They used him a little bit, yeah. Then he kind of fizzled out.
Becky is the only one I can think of that got her start.
The women were the ones that really transitioned over, like Sasha
and Becky,
and Charlotte.
But the reason why is because they didn't have a bunch of old timers to fall back on.
They didn't have a good women's roster.
Right. So they needed the roster, whereas Vince was more than happy to just fall back on the roster he had always known instead of giving some of the new guys a chance.
Sure. So now more has been coming out the past 48 hours. WWE fines $14.6 million in unrecorded expenses made by Vince McMahon. This is in the past.
Whoa.
48 hours, 36 hours.
Whoa,
so,
what is happening with WWE stock right now?
Well, it went up after he resigned. It did go up.
Oh, okay.
But like, this
shareholders
means,
have got to be fucking.
This means
pissed.
They have to go back probably and redo their official filings with the SEC. Like, you can't just.
Oh, yeah.
This is $14.5 million that were off the books. Going public was the worst thing that ever happened to this man in terms of stuff because you can't hide this shit forever. You can't. Sure. When you have a public a company like this, you can't get away with this corny shit. There's going to be a lot more.
And his response to it is like, clearly, I feel like I'm leaving in disgrace. They're letting me say this very simple thing. At 77, time for me to retire. Thank you, WWE yep. Universe. Then, now, forever together. WWE hashtag thankful hashtag. Like,
mm-hmm, sure.
The fact that there is no big speech from him means we need you to shut the fuck up and yeah. get the hell out.
Oh, yeah. His lawyers and whoever. The fact that he went on TV a month and a half ago or whatever it was and saying, I'm here. And like, it's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Well, remember initially when we talked about we expected a lot more bluster. He was talking about how he was going to go out there and talk. And I think someone was like, no, you're done.
But the fact that he even went out and said, I mean, he's here forever. And he walked out. And I think he's been on TV a little bit. But like, that's it. Nope, no goodbye. Just get the fuck out. And then,
the first response is translation. I really can't come back from all of this. You can't.
He's fucking done. If we're talking to government, saying like, well, that's interesting. Well, Vince, tell us about this $14.6 million. How many women do you think that is? 10? 5? 8? And what else are they going to dig up? You kidding me? If you're a stockholder, stockholders going to be like, where's this? Was there more money going away? What a disaster. He just wanted to be accepted by the mainstream. He wanted to be taken seriously as a businessman. He failed with his bodybuilding thing. He failed with the XFL twice.
Yeah.
And now The Rock bought it for peanuts, and now it's coming back next year. And I guarantee with The Rock behind it and his team, it'll be a much bigger success because it's someone who's probably smarter about it. Plus, it's going to be working with the NFL directly now for like development.
Oh, is
stuff
it?
For new technology and rule set.
Oh.
So it's very... Yeah, I think The Rock and his investor team only bought it for like $15 million. It's coming back next year, version 3. So, yeah, Vince just wanted to be, a big boy. You wanted to be taken seriously. I'm a serious businessman. No, you're a fucking carny. You're a fucking carny that disrespected everyone.
Yep.
And the people that ever worship him, I think it's disgusting. They do the bow down thing to him.
Gross.
Why? Because you like his little male soap opera that much?
No, I think it's because some people fucking admire him.
They really admire him. He's a strong man. He gets things done. He says what we're all thinking. He doesn't care. He ogles his daughter on camera. Ugh. Stephanie's going to be co-CEO, by the way. So there you have it there. No Minecraft NFTs is pretty big.
Yes.
Long intro, but I don't care.
Minecraft and basically announced that there can be no NFT usage within their program, and that basically sunk a project called NFT Worlds that was using Minecraft as the basis for their
was like the promise?
NFT game. Basically, it was like NFT skins and characters and things like that. And, Microsoft, because they own Minecraft now, was like, nope, no, you can't do that. And, I mean, just completely destroyed, I think it was close to $10 million in valuation, maybe? I got
to
look at
so
that.
So people were going to assume that this was going to be all hunky-dory to an integration, like API.
Yeah, basically, that's what they were doing. They were doing integration with Minecraft, and Minecraft was like, no, the fuck you aren't.
I love their release on the website because it was like, in bold, integrations of NFTs with Minecraft are generally not something we will support or allow. They're not going to.
Right.
At all. And then they go into, what is an NFT? How does this affect me? They like break it down, I guess, for people that don't know about it. Some companies have recently launched NFT implementations that are associated with Minecraft world files and skin packs. Other examples of how NFTs and blockchain could be utilized with Minecraft include creating Minecraft collectible NFTs, allowing players to earn NFTs through activities performed on a server, or earning Minecraft NFT rewards for activities outside the game. Each of these NFTs, blah, 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 blockchain, digital ownership. We are also concerned that some third-party NFTs may not be reliable and may end up costing players who buy them. You think so? Never be the last person holding an NFT. That's the saying. You don't want to be the last person. Get in early. As such, to ensure that Minecraft players have a safe and inclusive experience, in bold. It's funny how they got you to read it this far. They could have said up front, blockchain technologies are not permitted to be integrated inside our Minecraft client and server applications, nor may they be utilized to create NFTs associated with any in-game content, including worlds, skins, persona items, or other mods. There you go. Get fucked.
Yep. So I don't know. I have no idea what kind of money is in this NFT world. I thought I read something. I can't tell. But basically, a bunch of people who've been buying into this shit are now left without a platform. And NFT Worlds came out and said, we'll make our own game.
Uh-huh. I'm sure that'll be great. The problem is,
because if you could make your own game, then why didn't you do that from the start? Well, because you want to make this as cheap as possible. But
well, you also wanted to prey upon a huge fan base.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, happened to be a lot of younger people as well, which also makes this even more disgusting. A lot of kids and younger adults play Minecraft.
Just a couple of quick NFT updates, because I went to Web3 is going great.
Another update.
This is a big one. I can't believe this hasn't been talked about more. That fucking scumbag Musk. Tesla announces they sold 75% of their Bitcoin.
Oh, they took a loss on just about all of it.
So these fucking assholes who are out there being like, this is the future, aren't even holding on to their fucking
Bitcoin. I thought it was came out that they sold, but now it's coming out just how much they sold.
Well, this is from July 20th, so maybe I just missed it.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
75%.
They took a loss.
Yeah, of course. And then GameStop's NFT marketplace is still going great. Apparently, there is a NFT mimicking the 9/11 victim who jumped out of a window.
Oh, I almost forgot. I forgot. Yes. And the worst part about it is that, like, you have to be pre-approved to put your shit on that. I mean, I'm sure.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'm sure
it's just rubber stamped. Did they take that shit down yet? Because I remember that was on it 24 hours later.
GameStop's brand new NFT platform. Blah, 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 blah. One of their artists, Jules, created an NFT clearly modeled after The Falling Man, a well-known photograph of a man falling from the upper floors of the World Trade Center during the September 11th attacks in New York City. The NFT is titled Falling Man. It's a person wearing an astronaut suit. But
same
exact pose. It's clearly
same
the
background.
Same pose. And it doesn't say this was from the 23rd. It doesn't say if they got rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, gross.
Yep. Bottom feeders.
Yeah. It really goes to show you. It's not just they have no sort of moral compass for what they're doing in general because of NFTs, but then it goes to show you, we'll just go the extra step and do something. What's one of the worst possible things we can quote unquote make our art from? And we'll do that. We'll do someone that chose to jump to their death versus being burnt alive. That's what we'll do as our art.
Whew.
Well, that was fun. Fuck you, NFTs.
That was a marathon start to the podcast.
Yes, it was. Ian.
Yes.
We both went to Comic-Con this past weekend.
We did.
Did we not?
And one of my favorite things about Comic-Con is getting to meet up with friends, catch up with them, and see how they're doing. And one person that we both caught up with over the weekend at separate times was Chris Kohler, who now works for Digital Eclipse, previously of Wired, Kotaku, lots of big publications, you know, a long historian and journalist. Long successful career in game journalism.
I'm on the Not So Common podcast.
All around great guy. Was really good to talk to him. Of course, despite talking about, you know, personal lives and stuff, he was proud to show off the TMNT Cowabunga collection. And let me tell you, I'm not saying this. I don't want this to be an advertisement, but he deserves to be as proud of this collection as possible. We got the run through of it.
We got the private skinny at the time. The stuff wasn't public when we saw it.
And it looks it truly looks like it's going to be one of the best collections I've seen in terms of these recent game collections, like, you know, the Street Fighter, SNK, you know, all of those.
The Capcom ones.
So,
So this is what when you saw it on Friday, correct?
Yeah, I hung out with him Friday.
We literally went behind the curtain.
Or no, it was early Saturday, and then you went up Saturday there afternoon. Late Saturday.
It took us behind the curtain to watch it on to play it on Switch, along with a Konami representative. With I brought Pixel Dan and Andre, Black Nerd Comedy. Chris didn't know that I was bringing them, because they're huge Ninja Turtle fans. I like Ninja Turtles. They're huge Ninja Turtles fans. Dan's next book's going to be a Ninja Turtle guidebook. Andre, Ninja Turtles, it's one of his bread and butter. That and like Power Rangers. And they were great. They probably treated you in the same way. They ran through everything, explained everything in detail. The reason why we're going to focus on this so closely is because we talk about cash-ins all the time with like collections.
Or that Taito one that we talked about recently, you know, which was...
Yeah, we'll give you 10 games. You never heard of most of them, and we'll charge you like whatever, $3 a game, whatever, or $2 a game. And it's like, well, this is garbage. Like, why are we buying this? What, you're not telling us about this stuff. Like, this is a cash-in. Like, what are you doing to get not just us interested in this, but something that's going to last for the next generation, where you can go back and say, hey, this is like a moment in time we're showing you with this collection. Like, these games mean something. This is why these games are important.
Yeah. And Digital Eclipse has done a lot of good prior collections. Their SNK collection was fantastic. So is their Street Fighter 30th anniversary. I believe Frank Cifaldi and my friend Brandon worked on both of those. The amount of history, documents, and depth you get out of the museum section, to me,
just as important.
Almost makes the games feel secondary sometimes.
And they're doing, and by the way, they're doing the Atari one we spoke about a week or two ago.
So let's talk about some of these things that they showed us, though. First thing I want to talk about is the menu screen is fantastic. The menu screen is basically just a huge comic page.
Sure.
And when you're selecting the games, it floats around.
Yeah, it's cute.
You can, I think much like some of their previous collections, you can switch between the Japanese and
With a push of a button,
the Western titles.
You'll switch out the menu, what versions you're playing, with a different art and everything.
Yep. So one of the things that they've done, though, that I think is excellent that I want to talk about is in-game, you can press the right bumper, and it will pull up a mini, like, one-sheet strategy guide. And these are awesome. These look like they're pulled right from the pages of Nintendo Power. They've got
same style.
They've got some original art. They had some original artists draw new art just for those pages. Mm-hmm. And each one gives you like just some tips and tricks for each game. What's really cool is you can click on some of the tips and tricks as you scroll through, and it will actually show you an animated video showing you how to pull it off what to do.
Chris showed up one of the famous ones from the NES Ninja Turtles, you know, the Donatello bow trick with Rocksteady.
Oh yeah, sure.
You know, so like stuff like that. You it's like you're reading Nintendo Power, but then you can click on it. Whoop, video example comes up. Pretty cool stuff.
For some of these, some of them have more than others. One of the most incredible ones to me is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 for the Game Boy. Fantastic game. Unfortunately, it's pretty expensive now. Everyone's going to get a chance to play it. It's a Ninja Turtles, and I'm surprised it's not more popular or more talked about, because it's a Ninja Turtles Metroidvania. I mean, which is an awesome idea. It's mazes and maps, and you go around, and there's different bosses throughout. You know, like Dirtbag, I believe, is one of them. And you can get different turtles.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a full map as part of the strategy guide.
That's pretty cool.
And I don't know if he showed you this. One of the neat things was it's something that people would never know, but just like little things that developers would put in. There's a vertical section of rooms on the right side of the map, and the way the layout of the rooms is done, it actually spells TMNT.
Which game was this again?
This is Radical Rescue, the third Game Boy Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I didn't know that.
Game.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, no one knew until they were putting the map together, because
who would know that?
Literally, yeah. who would fucking know that? Yeah. It's just like this little Easter egg that's fucking awesome.
Real quick, we glossed over the games. These are the 1380s and 90s main Ninja Turtles games that you get. And you get the arcade, Super Nintendo, and Genesis versions of some of them. You get multiplayer on a few games. You get
multiplayer on all of, all the ones that have it. You don't get online multiplayer for all games.
Yes, you get online multiplayer for the arcade Turtles in Time, original arcade, and then you get it for the Super Nintendo Tournament Fighters.
Yep.
They chose that one to be, and it's funny because they said like, hey, I made a joke, you get into Evo. So yeah, get in the fighting game community. If you have good net code, maybe people can get into it and play it.
Yeah, and I mean, that is the one that I love the Sega one. It's not great, but it's got really, really good art. But they are two entirely different games.
Sure. And you don't obviously need the Super Nintendo one online if you have the arcade one. You don't need both.
Oh, you mean for the
for Turtles in Time,
right?
For Turtles in Time, that's what I mean. I just want to play the original. Like, so you get a good selection. You get the artwork on the side. Yes, you can do 4:3, or I don't know who in the world would want to do a widescreen version of games that weren't designed to be widescreen, but you can do that. A pox on you if you like that. I believe there's some also filters on this for the screen you can do on top of that. What else is there?
Yeah, the filter. So well, some filters. Okay, so soundtracks, press releases, boxes, and manual scans are going to be in there.
They literally bought new for some of them. Bought new boxes and they flattened them out to do good scans of. You can see all the sides of them at once by doing that. And full manual scans is nice.
Something that was pointed out, and I talked to Chris about that morning. That was something that was announced online. Was they are doing an interesting like floating translation sheet for all of the documents.
Yeah, so there's a lot of design docs from the, like for example, the one that Chris showed me, maybe showed you the same one or a different one. You know, like the giant mouser in the first.
I did not see that. But so, I love the mouser. Mouser is my favorite enemy.
So there's like the original sketchings.
Nice.
That the designers did over like in Japan, and it's like, okay, what's going to be here? That's stuff like that in the game is really cool to do that.
Like I said, that's kind of like the Turtles games are great, and I'm very excited to play them. I love the Ninja Turtles, but to me, that sort of stuff is what makes these collections for me.
Yeah, and then what's interesting is that I like this database stuff, is that there's metadata tagged to all the assets in this game, and there's also stuff
so you can search.
There's also stuff like screenshots from cartoon episodes that they included as well. Mm-hmm. For like, it's like, oh, you know, we'll put in some cartoon stuff to reference for characters, so you can like be in this and you can do like, hey, I want to search for Baxter Stockman character. I want to see him in see where he shows up in the Game Boy games and say, you know, whatever assets for the pictures here, boom. It all come up. You can search by like characters. You can search by type of media. You can search by, you know what I mean? Like by game. You can do these weird searches that would enable you to find. I said this to him. We talked about it. Like, this was necessary because there's going to be so much content. You won't be able to just like randomly scroll through and find it. By having these search functions, you'd be able to access this stuff more easily. That you'd be, oh, I want to search out, you know, all the assets associated with, say, this Game Boy game and this character. You know, you'll be able to do that. Like, this is interesting. But he had to spend time to tag every asset in the game with, like, what is this? Well, this has this character in it. It's for this system and it's this game. Like, that's a lot of work
to do that.
There's also complete soundtracks, and they're all in, like, audio cassettes. When you access them from the menu, that's pretty cute. Just a little thing like that. Press releases for games, original press releases that, like, you know, probably from the, you know, the Konami vaults. Some of this stuff that you haven't seen this stuff in forever that they scanned.
They know how to dig deep over at Digital Eclipse.
And here's the one that I think is really nice that I don't think I've seen this before. In other games will have, like, you know, fast forward and rewind, what have you. That's like, you know, emulator features. This is they put in a tool assisted non-hit walkthroughs for the games. Not like super perfect speed, just like, you know, like a skill player going through.
Yep.
So you can be like, okay, I want to play the Ninja Turtles arcade game. I want to get to the third level. You can watch it in real time, go through. Then okay, I want to pick it up right here and start playing it.
I don't think it's the first time it's been done, but I think the prior time I did see it done was on a previous Digital Eclipse.
Okay,
I think maybe the Mega Man, or they've done something like that before. It's really, really fucking cool, though.
Because you can just watch a playthrough.
And then, yeah, learn from it, and then stop and try yourself on.
Now, you can't go back and forth, because obviously if it's tool-assisted, it'll screw it up. But like the fact that you can do that, I think is cool. Let me look up the Mega Man one.
I don't know if that's right, but I'm fairly certain they've done something like that where you can jump in at any time before. Maybe Mega Man.
So what's important, I think, is that we're seeing a new standard established.
Yes.
For how these should be. With like the Atari one having all the interviews, and they're probably gonna have design docs and stuff, and new games.
These three by them: SNK 40th anniversary, yes. Street Fighter 30th anniversary, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Cowabunga collection. And I have all the faith that the Atari collection is going to follow suit.
Yes, I don't see why. Unfortunately, I mean, obviously the SNK one isn't as popular, so it didn't get the buzz that these other ones have.
No, but obviously. it was the first one they did that went like. Deep.
Oh yeah, we're talking about they're gotten these games I had never heard of.
They were traveling. They were going to Japan and going, you know, traveling 5 hours by train to like look at a board and picture it and shit like that. So yeah, nuts.
So I hope that the other companies follow suit. I was funny. Andre was like, "When are we gonna get that Tiny Toons collection?" Like, he loves Tiny Toons.
I do like the games. I love the Tiny Toons games.
He rattled off. There was the several Tiny Toons game. I'm like, yeah. He said you can throw the Animaniacs. And I'm like, I guess you can. There wasn't a lot of Animaniacs games. There was a few, but I mean, like, you could probably do
the Spielberg collection. I guess.
I was saying, don't hold your breath. But some people like Tiny Toons.
Genuinely good games almost across the board. Tiny Toons.
Yeah, I will get this. I will get the Atari one. I never got the SNK one, but now I'm thinking about it. I should probably support it and get that one. And it's almost like, again, we didn't really talk about the games because the games are the games. You can play the games.
Right. We all know the games.
We all know the games. Yes, we're going to add online to a few games.
There's good ones, not so good ones, great ones, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But I really just wanted to talk about the whole package and how much care was put into it.
Yeah, but even like we'll still discover games come up like an advertisement.
It's not a folder of ROMs.
Yes, it's because even Dan was like, yeah, like I'm not, I think it was Dan, like, I'm not really familiar with the Game Boy games, so I'll actually be interested in playing the Game Boy.
Well, the first and the third ones are really good.
Second one is a little.
The animation is dumb looking in the second one. It just looks dumb. Like it doesn't. He does this weird tippy toe walk. Yeah, look it up. Just like watch any second of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 on the Game Boy. The turtle animation totally just like turns me off, especially when the original game had great animation. I loved the way the sprites looked.
I like the way the sprites looked.
The sprites looked great. It wasn't great animation, but the style was great.
Yes. No, I get that. And then this is coming out. Was it August 30th?
August 30th. Can't wait.
August 30th. I'll get a physical version. You can get the limited collector's edition, which is nuts. It's not as nuts as the Shredder's Revenge limited run collection, but you still get a decent amount of stuff here. You get pins. Sure. It's not a shadow box. A little plastic display with the four turtles.
He gave me one of the posters. The poster is fucking sick. It's black and white original Eastman art. It's fucking amazing.
Is that different than this one here? Is that the same one or is that a different one?
No, it's different. Yeah, okay. You don't see it in there.
Okay, well, I got the last t-shirt. I got a black and white Schmedium t-shirt.
It's might have been the black and white version of this.
Black and white version.
I have to check it, but it's really fucking cool.
All right, you got that. I get the t-shirt. There you go. I'll squeeze into the t-shirt. So the limited version or limited, the collector's version is $150. Looks like it's out of stock. I'll probably just settle for the regular physical version.
I'm fine with the regular physical version myself.
Hey, you don't have to worry about DLC. That was a joke. It's like, there'll be any DLC added. You're good. You're good to go.
No, I mean, there's other collections where it's like, oh, you could have maybe put this in or something. No, there's nothing that needs to be added.
We should probably run down what games are in this again, because that's one thing we didn't say. Where's the list of games you got here? You got Turtles Arcade, Turtles in Time Arcade, NES 1, 2, and 3. Tournament Fighters on NES for the two people that want to play that version. You get Turtles in Time, Super Nintendo, Tournament Fighters, Super Nintendo, Hyperstone Heist, Genesis, Tournament Fighters, Genesis, and you get the three Game Boy games. So you get that nice good run based on the first cartoon.
Yep.
You know, basically, you get that the golden age.
I've been revisiting Hyperstone Heist. And I think it's great. I didn't love it as a kid because it's shorter, but it's just like it's a really nice compact experience with great like 16-bit Genesis art. And then I'm really happy. Honestly, the thing that I think I'm happiest about is just having an online playable version of the original arcade game again. It's been like a decade and a half.
Yeah, I've never played it online before. I didn't get it the first time.
Yeah. I was on the 360 for that brief period. It was awesome.
That
was 2007.
You could have sold me some physical $20 version of just that one game, and I probably would have bought it.
I would too. It's one of my all-time favorites.
That game's amazing. I know people love Turtles in Time, but the look and feel of the original.
I like the original better. Yes. I mean, Turtles in Time is fun, but I like the original better.
Yes. I like how it's a little simpler and it's more in tone with the TV show. You get all the hits basically there from the first few seasons of the show. Two full seasons of the show. You get the characters there. Ian,
Patrick,
we have a Patreon, don't we?
We do. You go to patreon.com/CU podcast. And what do you do there? Well, if you exchange some money with us, you get some stuff in return. You get the full video podcast. You get the bonus bits from before we record this podcast. You get close to weekly writings from me. I'll have a new one up today. Mm-hmm. We also do these polls.
We also have the
hangouts.
We have the hangout, and we have the enamel pin club now.
That's right.
You join that tier or above, you get an enamel pin shipped out to you. If you're at the one or above, make sure you fill in your address. If you're in the hangout tier, you're entitled to a pin.
That's right.
Pat will print out that stamps.com postage. Use code CU podcast, and you could you'll get a pin. All right. Let me just say something to the patrons before I get into it. I love you for making this happen. And to the doubters out there on the Patreon, don't ever doubt. Dreams can come true. In a tight split, in second place, 48%, is grading or reselling worse for video game collecting? And in a stunning Buster Douglas-style upset, 52%, how is gaming on the New Jersey Boardwalk different in 2022? I thought that would get 10% of the vote. Thank you for making it happen.
I even told Pat, I was like, this gets one more week.
Ian was a doubter. I had faith.
Well, in the previous weeks, it was low. It wasn't doing so hot.
But you made it happen.
It's the comeback kid.
You proved 48% of the Patreon folks wrong, and Ian. So how was gaming on the New Jersey Boardwalk different in 2020? A month ago when I went there. Was it a month ago? Is that a little more than a month ago that I went there? So let me tell
do
you.
Do tell,
about,
Patrick. Do
let
tell.
Me, let me tell you about the Jersey Boardwalk.
Let me tell you something.
Let me harken back to the Jersey Boardwalk. Go back to the 80s, to the 90s. Gaming, you'd have on the Boardwalk about 6 to 8 arcades, main arcades. And you still have about 6 left, even with the fires. The fires only took out the one that was the best one, unfortunately. The Yestercades one. Excuse me, it was Flashbacks. Not Yestercades. Flashbacks took that one out. But you have the other ones left on the street side. Yestercase was on the beach, so that's why it went up in flames more easily, too. So when you went to the Boardwalk back in the day, it was your usually first time seeing a lot of these games on the Boardwalk.
Yeah, you've said that before, that the Boardwalk was like the place to... That's premiere. Where you saw what was up and coming, because they would always have the new stuff at a place with so many people.
Yes, and they probably... I don't know how the biz usually release these, but it made sense. Because otherwise, we go to the arcades... The mall, maybe like part of a movie theater, like Amboy Cinemas, shout out if they're still around, where they'd have like, you know, 15, 20 arcade games, but like scattered throughout the main big main lobby there. So you did not know what was coming out. You didn't. You go up to Casino Pier, Coin Castle, Lucky Leo's, Sonny and Ricky's, the Flashbacks one back in the day, and you would discover all these new ones. Like, oh my god, 8-player Daytona's there for the first time, whatever that was, like 95.
I love 8-player Daytona.
You know, like they had it at Casino Pier. Oh my god, they have the Time Traveler Sega hologram game, the big fucking huge white thing there. You know, oh my god, they have the sit down shooter one where it moves around. That I always forget the freaking name of. You was gonna tell me the name of that one.
Stun Runner.
No, a shooter. It's a shooter one, space shooter one, where it goes around.
Oh, Galaxy Force.
Yeah, Galaxy Force.
Sorry.
So it was always your first experience. But then obviously, with the late 90s, less and less new arcade games coming there, at that point it became more fighting games. Oh my god, you have Soul Calibur on the big screen. That was a big one. Like, what was that, 98? That was a big one to see that in the big screen. Big screen Soul Calibur and big screen fighting games for the
Soul
first
Calibur
time.
Soul Calibur was so cool, too.
I remember one of the first times I saw a freaking Primal Rage was on one of the Dynamo cabs.
Really?
With the little, yeah, the little...
The front, like, bench. Front that, it's not a bench, but...
It goes underneath, and it's a raised platform. It's like there's space between the control panel and the monitor so everyone can see. So it was interesting to see the transition to the 2000s because... The heyday of arcade games ended by then. You also had less pinball machines coming out. Only Stern was left. by the 2000s. That was it.
2000, I believe Stern was the only manufacturer. Because Pinball 2000, I believe both of those machines actually came out in 99, and then that was it for Williams.
And then by
I think Stern put out, it was either Monopoly or Railroad Tycoon was their first from the comeback. I think it was Monopoly.
And they started doing Sopranos, and they started doing Family Guy and life stuff in South Park.
Some of those early ones are rough. South Park was not Stern.
Oh, it wasn't Stern, it was Sega.
Yeah, I believe that South Park was Sega.
But anyway, so, and then Sega was done by the late 90s as well, right? With Pinball, they were done too.
And technically that was Stern, you're right, because Data East, Sega, back to Stern.
We're back to Stern, okay. So the point is this. I hadn't been in the Boardwalk in 3 years, and so by then I saw it changed 3 years ago. But how's it changed now? We'll just put blunt it together.
Yeah.
I will say this. We're never going to be able to go back to the golden age is never coming back for arcades. At least for how we remember it on the Boardwalk in terms of new stuff. They don't make new normal games anymore. They make shooters with big guns. They make racing games for you to play. And you see fighting games. That's it. And even the fighting stuff is like I went to when I went to.
There's not a whole lot of new like arcade fighters being made. They're all getting like.
There was a mission and went to Mission Beach. It was actually a beat 'em up. There it was a DC fighting beat 'em up there that I didn't see before. That was up there, I believe. But anyway, so unfortunately, you go to Lucky Leo's and you see you walk in now and it's there was always a lot of. Crane claw games called crane games claw games whatever a lot of them now that's like dominates when you walk in there's no arcade games at all you go to the back to the left you'll see back and to the left you'll see all right there's like the alien shooter game there couple of driving games there but that's it it's all redemption machines there's a ski ball back there they had four of the hoops games where you get the tickets out.
I love those.
Cards now for credits. Most of the stuff you can put a dollar in, but cards for credit, thankfully still tickets. So I've been now to Mission Beach over here. They put the points on your card, which
yeah,
I hate.
They do.
I hate that.
Yep.
Give me the tickets, damn it. Give me the tickets. I want to feel the ticket. I want to see it come out, the row of tickets. So played skee-ball with my sister and mom. I did the basketball. I almost got to 50. When you get to 50, you get the bonus time. I got to 49.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
I'm not awful at that game. I'm not great.
I am. If you want to see someone flounder, it's me. I love basketball. I love trying to shoot the hoops. I'm so bad at
those.
I'm
too streaky, just like with bowling. I'll miss three, hit six in a row, then miss five in a row. I'm like too – my mechanics are super streaky when it comes to stuff like that, like bowling or shooting hoops. It's just super weird. I don't have enough reps. You got to do a billion times to get it perfect. So that was great. There was a nice Yahtzee game where you have the rows, you have 6x6 rows, and the balls fall, and they fall randomly, and that's basically your dice spin.
Oh, okay. Yahtzee. Interesting.
And then you can choose which ones to stay for the ball, or you pop them back up to get your four of a kind, or go for a Yahtzee, or go for a straight. So that was actually really fun.
Interesting.
My sister pulled up to one, and someone had left like $10 worth of credits in. I swiped a credit for her. I was big cash pat that day, buying everyone's credits.
Big money.
And so she kept playing. I played and was done in a minute. She was playing for 10 minutes. I'm looking like, what the hell? And she got a ton of she kept getting like three and four of a kinds easily, and straights were easy in the machine. The problem was the ones and sixes were on the right, so you're far less likely for the ball to bounce to those rows to get the ones and the sixes.
Right.
That was the problem. To get to those two rows.
Yeah, those would be harder to. Yeah,
yeah. It's basically it's a 6x6 layout.
Yeah,
because
so everything's more likely to land in the middle.
Is it five dice in Yahtzee?
Five dice.
So it's six by five. You have a row for each number, and then you have five dice.
That makes sense. Balls.
So you can hold it for a second. You got a second, throw. You get two throws. Or there's a three in Yahtzee. Is it three?
It's three in Yahtzee.
Okay, the main was three. But anyway, so that's what you try to do. But every time you landed, you can keep it. You got the points each time. Oh, I got a straight. I can keep the straight again. They give you the points again if you want to just keep the full. It's like you get small straights and large straights, and you obviously four or five. So, yeah.
Four and five.
But those were easy to get. It was easy to get
three and four.
I thought it was four and five because it's five dice.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. I can't remember. You're probably right.
And then the full houses, you can get a set of three and two.
Yes, of course.
And we got a full house. So. I guess what was disappointing was the lack of even pinball as well. Usually, even going to like Coin Castle, you used to see at least the newer Sterns. You'd see like, oh, there's the Lord of the Rings one. Or you see, like I say, Sopranos.
Like, yeah, you always see, you see like, you usually see one like one. Early 2000s era Stern.
Yeah, you see like, give me one. Not like back in the day, you go to Casino Pier and you get like a hodgepodge of ones from over the past 10 years. Oh, there's my favorite. There's Baywatch next to Royal Rumble.
That is such a ramp heavy machine.
next to Dirty Harry they had. And then they'll maybe have a newer one. Maybe they'll have one earlier from like the mid to early 80s, you know. Like there'd be like a decent mix. That's not there anymore. Like the pinball's gone. It was maybe still there 3 years ago. No more pinball on the Jersey Boardwalk, I'm sorry to say. Like that's kind of, it was kind of not depressing, but unless I missed one, I think I didn't go to one in the North Seaside Heights. That arcade, I don't think it was open when I went there, but that was gone. I'll just say this about the claw games. Crane games. They ain't skill no more. At one point they were skill. I can come back with four or five in a day. Now it's all about, well, you can pick something up. You ain't carrying it over. Like they're rigged now more than I can honestly say that there was a point where certain ones were totally skilled.
I think there's a point where, well, I don't think, I'm not saying on the Jersey Boardwalk there is, but I know there's plenty that are still skill based elsewhere.
It used to be that it didn't matter how many coins you put in. It was all, you had the same chance, one person versus the next of getting it.
Yep.
They had the two different main types. Maybe they had three models. They had the bigger claw that could pick up bigger things and was free, go left and right. They had the smaller version of claws, which were not as easy to get those. Then you had the hit a button and goes up, hit a button and goes right, and it stops. You hit it twice. It goes up, over, and you pick it up. They had that version stand up as well as looking overhead. I love the tabletop ones. Those were usually the ones where they went up and to the right.
Oh, yeah. Those were cool.
Like a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Those are totally gone. Maybe because they took up too much space. I loved those because they were harder to get, but I think the claw was reliable if you could zero in, but they made it hard because like you couldn't stop it. It was just up and then to the right. So I played a couple of machines there. It was a wizard machine. Where, like, it's like 30 types of wizards. They're kind of cute. I won one finally. I picked up a wizard. It was like, I think, five plays. It was like, five plays for $3 or five for $5. I put the five in. I picked up a wizard every time. I hooked him. I'm a good player. I'd pick him up, and then either when it got to the top, it would drop it, or it'd move like 6 inches and drop it. Back in the day, if it moved 6 inches, once you had a top, you were good. Like, you got it. You were good to go. Am I boring you, Ian?
No.
You're good to go. It would drop it, you'd win it. I think the new machines they know how much money's in from the last win, and so if you just won one, it loosens it up.
Well, it's probably a time thing. I would bet it's similar to the replay score on a pinball machine. It starts low. Mm-hmm. The more money you put into it, well, the better you do, higher the replay score gets. If you get the high score. And then when you walk away, there's a cool down time, which brings it back down. So I'm assuming it's kind of like the opposite with that. You start off, it's going to be real loose. If it sees you put enough money in, it probably tightens the claw up and lets you grab it a little bit better.
That's bullshit. That's not
it
skill.
Is. I'm not saying it's pinball not bullshit, skill based. Pat. I'm just saying it's similar. There's probably like some sort of internal timer that's keeping track of
I
that.
Think it's just the more money you put in, the tighter gets till you win something, because like there's no reason why you could grab something, lift it up, and then when you start moving, all of a sudden it loosens up. Like what? Like if it's firm enough to grab it by his fat head, lift them up and start moving, it should be fine. So the one I got really pissed at though was there was one with it was a bigger one with these really cute bigger sloths, or like they had the bigger arms. I wanted to win it for a friend, and each time it grabbed it. It started lifting it up. It's a good hold. Would drop it as it was going up. Happened 4 times in a row. And I'm good at noticing what the prime one is. I said, you know what? I can't win this. I walked away. Came back 5 minutes later. It was gone. Person behind me probably put in a couple more dollars. It firmed it up and got it.
Firmed it up.
Hey, Lucky Leos.
Like it's a custard.
Hey, Lucky Leos. You've been around for like 60 years? That's not cool. I love you, Lucky Leos. I'm going to be with you forever. You and Coin Castle, you're my best arcades. You can't do that to me. You got to get some skill-based ones in there. I know you don't want to lose all your prizes. That's bullshit. The same way it's bullshit with, like, the blocks where you get the line up. You know, the across the LEDs, that's rigged.
Yes.
You hit it, and it stops either too soon or too late. That's rigged. Can never win that. Do you have any questions, Ian, about this stuff? I saw, you know, like, mostly Redemption and the claw games. That's where you're at. It's like 95%. They are getting more varied, though, with the Redemption games. Like, the Yahtzee one I didn't see before. Like,
sure. Back,
it's more closer to, like, something you see, like, the coin pushers are more extravagant than they used to
be. Coin pushers, I was going to ask you. That was what I was going to ask you about. I've heard that coin pushers are very popular again, and they've started doing it where it's, like, instead of putting your own tokens and stuff in, you pay a certain amount, it gives you 10 coins. And I've heard a lot of them dispense, like, trading cards and stuff these days.
Yeah, I played at Mission Beach. Willy Wonka cards come out. You can keep them and redeem for games. You collect the whole set. You get a certain amount of coins.
And my buddy's got, like, a DC one local to him that does the same thing.
So they had a cool setup. Now this is a Redemption game podcast, real quick. They had the Price is Right Tower, where they had Plinko, and they had the Yodelé guy.
Oh, yeah.
So I played the Plinko before. The reason why the Plinko one is fun is because you can, when you spell Plinko, you spin the wheel. You spin the bonus, and you get the bonus. That's probably rigged what you get, but, like, it's supposed to be semi-random. Willy Wonka has the same one when I play that. So it's not just you push the coins over to get the tickets. There's an extra incentive. If you line it up, you can try to spell Plinko, where it drops down, because that's what a coin pusher is.
Yeah.
It can drop down the little pegs, but they put the pegs in like it's Plinko.
Mm-hmm.
And you can aim it, and then generally it's going to fall to that side, but it's semi-random for how it hits the metal pegs. So that was really fun. My sister and I loved playing the coin pusher. We used to do the nickels as a kid.
They
had nickel ones as a kid, so it felt like you're getting more bang for your buck. But now it's just like, you know, quarter size or token size.
Canal Fest in Tonawanda in Buffalo used to have actual coin pushers. Like, you just put quarters in.
And you win the quarters.
And you'd win the quarters.
So it's gambling.
It was straight up gambling.
It's by chance gambling, basically.
Straight up illegal gambling.
I've heard of places that have done that, where it's like, yeah, they rig it so that you get the quarters back instead of the tokens.
Yeah.
I guess it's a little thing you hit where it goes to, like, the output slot, you know, basically.
Oh, no, literally all that's in there is quarters. It's just quarters, and you put quarters in, and it pushes quarters.
Oh, no, but that's how they used to be. I'm talking about tell you, on the Seaside Heights Boardwalk, it used to be quarters and nickels, but you didn't get them back. You got tickets.
Oh, right, okay, gotcha.
You're still putting your own quarters
in. No, these ones, you literally got the quarters that fell off.
Well, I'm saying
back.
They're probably the same sort of machines, but they rig them so that you get them back. That's not... I would love to play that, because I could tell when one's ready to bust and sort of target it.
Yep. That's what I do.
But they know the payoffs never going to be as good, obviously. It's like playing slots. You're going to get 90 cents back for the dollar.
Yeah.
On the coin pushers, probably less than that. It's probably like 75 cents.
Now, I remember walking up to one. There was a big stack of coins, and I put like I took like $5 worth of quarters, and I ended up making like 30 back, and I was like, we never need to do this again.
Yep, and you ruined it for the next people. That's basically how the slot machines work.
Yep.
It's a payout thing. Well, that was fun, Ian.
That was fun.
We should just do a redemption game podcast. I can do that.
I'm looking up coin pushers.
We have voicemails, Ian.
We do.
Go to anchor.fm/CU podcast. You go, you leave us a voicemail. Try to keep it short and sweet, and I'll love you forever. And we don't have a friend that checks in anymore, but the compilation, Volume 2, is going up later this week. And then Volume 3 will be out from our pal, Joey Freeze. So here's the first one.
Hey, guys. Eric from Wisconsin here.
Hey, Eric.
Just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on Dr. Fate, seeing as he's going to be coming up in the new movie Black Adam, played by Pierce Brosnan. Thanks, guys.
Zaddy Pierce Brosnan playing Dr. Fate, looking cute.
Wow.
What?
That could be fun.
Yeah, he's got like a full goatee. Like, yeah. I don't know much about Dr. Fate. Frank loves the character.
Yeah, I don't know. I know about him is from like one of the DC fighting games.
It goes back to it's a Golden Age character.
Yep.
It was in the, I think, Justice Society before the League, I believe. We're literally talking early 40s there with like Hawkman. It's like, I think, before even like Batman might have been in it. I don't forget. Anyway, Hawkman's in Black Adam as well. There's an interesting sort of cast with that.
I'm looking forward to the Black Adam movie a little bit. I mean, I'll go see it. I think The Rock is a fun actor.
He does his part well. It's like him and Cena. It's like these guys might be the new action guys, even though they're both getting up there. There's no action star under like 45 that's like established. It's kind of like weird.
Yeah, you're right.
Jason Statham's like over 50.
Yep.
There's no one that's coming like filled in that in when you think about that.
Yeah,
it's really weird. Right. We need some youngins. I'm almost 45. Yeah, I don't know much about Dr. Fate, though. Yeah, Frank loves him. Frank's like, yeah, find me some Dr. Fate. I'm like, yeah, Frank, I'm going to do your personal shopper. I used to personal shop for Frank every year, look at the trade paperbacks for his stuff. Find him like he wanted the pre-Robin Batman that first like year and a half, and I had to find him those and stuff like that. But it's like this year, first of all, there weren't a lot of trade paperbacks, but I'm not spending 3 hours looking for stuff where like no. Andre and Dan would be like, come on, let's get going. They're too nice to say that, but they'd be thinking that.
Hey, it's Toy. I've really been digging Ian's horror portions of the podcast. You guys should talk about Return of the Living Dead, one of my favorites.
I watched it two nights ago.
Two clerks at a medical supply company accidentally break a canister open that contains a strange gas.
So fucking
the gas
good.
Causes a refrigerated corpse to spring to life. They dismember the corpse and try to burn the remains with the help of a neo-Nazi mortician. I'm not kidding. The smoke causes acid rain to fall back down on a cemetery where a punk nudist and her friends are partying.
Okay,
before you can say, wow, Kentucky sure sounds more exciting than I remember, hundreds of dead people are leaping out of the graves ready to party. It was written and directed by Dan O'Bannon, the guy who wrote Alien. I would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Well, you just gave the whole plot synopsis, but I've seen parts of it on TV. I remember now. I remember the punk concert part of it.
Fantastic fucking movie.
So these are is an offshoot series where they're the comedy version of the zombies from the
yeah. 80s. Basically, he was allowed to use Living Dead. Romero chose Dead after they argued about the direction they wanted the movies to go in, and then it kind of splits off from there. But yes, I almost talked about it in the intro because after working in a horror movie booth all weekend, I wanted to watch because a lot of the stuff there was a bit of merchandise that was Return of the Living Dead. One of the big popular things we sold that weekend was a t-shirt with Tarman's face on it. Tarman is the standout zombie from that movie who's like walking around the medical supply facility yelling brains the whole time. Fucking great movie. The sequel is good too. After that, you can ignore it.
Pat, I just finished watching the intro for episode 322.
I remember that one.
And I'd like to know why you wanted to murder someone at the Atlanta, Georgia airport.
Does he want to tell a story or I should tell it?
Honk, honk.
Okay.
Pat sneezed in a bathroom and the janitor made fun of him.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was the lead up. It was coming. I was miserably exhausted. Was that the end of 2019? Well, yeah, because I didn't go to that many conventions last year. It must have been 3 years ago.
Yeah, I guess.
I think I was coming back from Syracuse. Syracuse is a rough flight. Was it Syracuse? It was a rough. Either way, it was a rough flight with the layover, where I had to arrive somewhere really early in the morning, coming somewhere, or coming back. I forget. Either way, I was like miserable. I was tired, and it was like so late. I think it was early in the morning coming back. It might have been coming back because I was so tired. So I go to the Georgia airport of Atlanta. I've been there a couple of times. And it was like, well, I go to the bathroom there and it's empty. There's just a custodian. This guy probably like, I want to say he's probably like 60 there. Just like, you know, he's got his mop or whatever. And he's like there and he's cleaning up. And I'm feeling exhausted. I'm probably a little sick. I'm like stumbling around. That's how bad I am.
I do believe you came back slightly. I believe you came back slightly sick.
Yeah. So I was not in good shape from everything. And then, you know, I do a little pee pee and then I go and I usually blow my nose. I honk when I blow my nose. I want to do a force. So I go, And so then I throw out the thing. And then without looking at me, the guy just goes, ha ha. And then I stop. I look, I go, what?
Excuse me, sir?
And he just went, ha ha. I did it again. And I just had to walk out. I did not want to get into confrontation and potentially strangle someone with a roll of toilet paper in an airport in Georgia. Did not want to do that.
Hey guys, this is Duffy from Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville. If you could get high with one video game character, who would it be and why? Thanks.
What was
getting high with a video game character?
Oh, getting high with a video game character? I'd get high with Kirby.
Of course you would, Ian. Of course you would.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Big fan of the show. I hope this isn't too much of a loaded question, but here I go. About a month ago, Chris Bors released season 6 of his series, The Irie Gamer, with commentary.
I'm sure it was fun.
At the beginning, he talks about being approached by a higher power in the YouTube gaming scene. He doesn't delve into what exactly they were asking of him, but he does say that he rejected their offer. From that point, he noticed his channel was no longer performing the way it used to. My question is, were there really people in the community with that kind of power back in the day?
No. No, there were not.
No.
I don't think that probably happened, in my opinion. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Good to finally talking to you guys, as I've been watching since the very first episode. So years ago, I got a stack of PS2 RPGs from a thrift store for cheap, one of them being Xenon Saga 3, which is a pretty pricey game now. When I got it, it was clearly resealed. However, last night I decided to open it, and turns out it is factory sealed underneath that in near mint shape.
Oh!
I'd just like to sell it for as much as
I can. It is factory sealed.
Sealed!
Wow.
I can, so I can put the money towards a different copy that is already opened, so I can play it.
There you go.
And also add some more games to my collection. So get the most amount of value out of it. Should I just sell it as is, or should I consider getting it graded? And if so, which company should I go with? I'd rather support VGA. However, it seems like most graded games nowadays are through WADA.
I mean, to be honest, you gotta go through WADA if you want the most bang for your buck, since they have the Heritage Auction monopoly. They might be selling VGA stuff now. Who knows? Because of the lawsuit. I don't know. But like, you gotta go through WADA right now.
I thought there was news that they were. I thought some auction
There's other auction companies doing it, like Golden's doing. You can do that.
Oh, okay, right. Well, maybe I was thinking
of
Golden.
If you really want my, I mean, I'm waiting for CGC to get started. They're going to roll it out. If I get stuff graded, it's going to be through CGC.
I feel like CGC will become the norm.
Our norm.
I think CGC will become the norm. And as much as I hate to say it, if you are trying to sell something for monetary value right now, then yes, I do think you should probably grade it. The value!
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is David from the San Gabriel Valley. My question is, with all these remakes coming out, from the 80s and 90s, what would be your ideal Bloodsport remake?
There would not be one.
I'm sorry to not answer your question.
There would not be one.
There is no ideal remake.
I can speak for Ian. There would not be a remake.
The original is perfect, and I would absolutely loathe to see a remake of it.
I mean, if you wanted to do a one where Van Damme comes out of retirement and does like, hey, here's Frank Duke's 35 years later.
Is like a coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Coaches someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You can continue the story. Well, you can retcon 2 through 4 and continue the story.
What's 2 through 4?
What? Yeah. I don't know, man. Do not remake that movie. You would never get the tone. The soundtrack, it would, oh God, there is no way you could do it.
That Canon Films feel that it's so particular, especially the film grain use, it was so like cheap film grain.
It's like a quintessential Canon film.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Ethan from Garrettsville, Ohio. I was wondering, after hearing you guys talk about the Atari 50th anniversary, do either one of you have much experience with the Nuon? I know it's kind of the spiritual successor to the Jaguar, and I was just curious if you guys had ever really tried it out or knew much about it.
No, I have no experience with the
Nuon. No, in fact, I'm not. I know so little about it that I have no idea how the Jaguar and the Nuon are connected.
Yeah, I know
Nuon has a Tempest game on it,
a DVD player.
So, a DVD player that can that also has, I think, some processing set aside for games.
As I say, like, I don't understand.
Because there's Tempest was really big on the Atari.
On there.
Yeah.
There was literally, Iron Soldier was on there. Okay, so Iron Soldier series was on there. They only had 8 games.
Okay.
I don't know if I've ever seen one in person.
Yeah.
Maybe once. So if you ever see a DVD player out in the wild, check it and see if it's a Nuon, I guess.
I think I saw one at a flea market once and was like, I don't need this.
Oh, really? You didn't buy it? It's rare, Ian.
Yeah.
How many do they make of those?
Probably not a lot.
I think like 25,000? Not even. Like, who knows? It was out for 3 years. Okay, maybe more than I thought. Okay. It's funny. Maybe Frank found one and bought it and threw it out.
Dude. $130.
Well, that's not that much. $150? $50? No, isn't that nice?
Pat, Ian, this is Jonathan from Denver. I wanted to let you know that Colorado Style Pizza exists. I heard you talking about it. Last week's episode, and Bojo's Pizza, it's a Colorado-only kind of thing. Thick rolled crust, thin crust underneath, A lot of toppings. Toppings go up as high as the crust is rolled, which is like an inch and a half. It's not deep dish, so don't be thinking it's Chicago style, because it totally doesn't suck.
Okay.
I mean, I'll eat it.
I'll try it.
It's pizza. I'll try it.
Did they have moose balls on there in Colorado? Is that part of it? Is that what...
Rocky Mountain oysters.
Rocky Mountain oysters.
Bull testicles.
Can you actually get those still?
Yeah, of course. You can eat Rocky Mountain oysters anywhere. I mean,
you can eat them anywhere.
Not anywhere. You can get them. I mean, there are definitely restaurants that still sell them in the Midwest.
Really?
Yes.
Are they like a delicacy? They cost a lot? Or
I don't know. They look like bar food, honestly.
Are they crunchy?
Yeah, they're fried. I mean, when you see them in real life, they don't really look like a nut. Oh, God. Ugh. Testicles. Raw testicles.
It's a joke. Who was the first person decided that's what I want to try? They're deep fried, at least?
Oh, yeah, they're deep fried. Sliced and deep fried.
You think they're chewy, or are they like hard and crunchy? I don't know how to think about this anymore.
Yeah, I'm over
My mouth is kind of watering thinking about it. I'm like kind of, oh, you dip it in some...
Deep fried and crunchy is, you know, that gets my motor going.
You dip it in some honey mustard, you know, you mask the taste of anything.
I would probably try one, but I'm not like going out of my way to do it.
Okay, I'll do a couple more here.
Greetings and salutations.
Okay.
This is Eric, formerly from East Amherst, New York.
Okay.
I'm requesting some advice. I have a collection of about 30 to 40 vintage PCs from XTs up to P4s, as well as peripherals and software in a storage unit, and I want to clear out the storage unit since the monthly fees have more than doubled. How would you recommend safely selling off a collection directly out of a storage unit, or would you at all?
I have no idea.
Thanks, guys.
I mean, like, you're talking bulky PC towers that are tough to move. I have no advice. You have to find like a computer collecting group on Facebook. Someone want to come in person and pick it up.
I could help you, but I've got really no advice on that.
That's a tough one. Bulky stuff, you know, the PCs weigh like 20, 30 pounds. Stuff.
Hey, Pat, it's Daryl from Buffalo again. Time to ask that really hard question. What do you prefer more, the NES or the Super NES? All right, guys, have a good day. Hope to see you soon.
We spoke about this before. As a curiosity and a more interesting library, the NES is a far more interesting library.
The NES is the winner for me, yeah, for that reason.
Because there's so much weird, kooky stuff on it.
People throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Not even on just the unlicensed. Unlicensed, obviously, but there's even licensed stuff that's weird.
Plenty of licensed stuff that's weird. I'm not even thinking unlicensed. And of course, when you go unlicensed, it gets crazy too.
And the Super Nintendo, obviously, the average game is a lot better. You know, if the average game on the NES is like 2.5, like the average, Super Nintendo is probably 3 to 3.5 because the games are just more polished in general. There's no broken games. Broken games. Besides Pit Fighter, Half Star, according to a certain Super Nintendo guidebook. But it's boring. It's almost like it's like sanitized in a way a little bit, some of it, because of that. You know,
yes, it does feel, it feels like a sanitized system.
But obviously it's a great system. But they're different things. Do you wanna check in with another semi favorite?
Maybe? Sure.
Hey Pat. Hey Ian. It's Foxandra from New Jersey. Well, from New Jersey, but no longer in New Jersey. That's personal information, however, and not the reason I'm calling in. You guys were talking about people saying retro games suck, and you thought maybe the younger kids aren't liking the old systems. From what I have heard from Zoomer colleagues of mine, apparently there's a lot of Zoomers all about the retro games, and in some circles, it's cool to be into them. So I am happy to report that the kids, as they say, are all right. All the BS of AAA games you guys were talking about is annoying as hell, though. That's why I tend to play a ton of indie titles, as they're more likely to cater to my sensibilities, as well as be crafted with love on the account of them having smaller teams. This brings me to my question, though. Is it just me, or do some retro-inspired games look weird because the sprites are the same as they were in 4x3 games, but with the screens being 16x9, they look all odd? Not all of them, mind you. I just feel like some of them make the screen look busier than my voicemails.
She didn't cut herself off there.
No, Zisa just going to some sexual innuendo and having it cut off, and it didn't happen there.
So I realize that there are younger people who like them. But you know, it's like when we used to talk about when they would announce stuff for the Nintendo Online service. There are a lot of people who I think are kind of more starting. It's maybe that they're not into the older stuff, but they start later.
Yeah, retro to them is more when they grew up with.
So I get it. And then as far as the indie games go, there are some that really like do the style properly. And then there are some that it's almost like there's too much attempt to adhere. I don't think it ever comes across as a full picture. So there are definitely some that I don't like the look of.
So the particular question was like, when it's a 16:9 screen, but it's 4:3 style sprites. I'm trying to remember. Like, so I mean, like, it's too busy because there's too much stuff on the screen.
Because it's using the same scaling, but it's stretching it widescreen.
So it's widescreen. So there's a lot more space, and there's like too much.
I have played stuff that has done that to me, where it's like, my eyes aren't used to it, expanding to the full screen.
You prefer having it closer to a square than a rectangle.
Yeah, easier to keep track of.
Oh, that makes sense. I might keep that in mind for the future.
All right.
Well, that was a fun one, Ian.
That was a fun one.
Tired.
Me too. Tired. Me too.
Hair's all poofy.
Well, I have a lot of work to go do.
I thought you have an announcement. You're like, I have
it. No announcement. No special announcement. All right. I guess that's it.
Okay.
We still haven't really gotten used to how to end with that.
I'm fine with the awkwardness, Ian.
That fake Tommy.
All right. We'll rebound. We'll rebound.
We'll get back there.
There was a time there wasn't fake Tommy.
Yeah, I know.
There was a time.
Seems like a long, long time ago.
All right. We'll see you later, everyone.
Bye.